Scott St. Martin is an actor and singer whose debut book, If You Want Me to Name Drop, became a hit for fans of theatre worldwide. I'm very pleased to say that Scott joined me on the phone a few weeks ago to discuss his career. We open by talking about auditions and how much advantage is there to having a number of successful roles behind you?
I suppose so, because it means then you're more versatile. There are certain things, unfortunately, I was in the big musical La Cage aux Folles at the Palladium, mm-hmm. which opened in 86, 39 years ago, just coming up for the anniversary, actually.
Don't remind me.
And when that closed, it actually, I had to take it off my CV because there was a big scare because of the AIDS epidemic.
Right.
So my agent said, you're going to have to take La Cage off because people are cancelling your auditions. They won't see you because you're in La Cage, which sounds a bit odd, really, that you think people in the theatre were discriminating against me just because I had been, they didn't know what my sexuality was.
Yeah.
They just thought, right, he's been in a musical about AIDS, which has nothing to do about AIDS, but because it's about a gay couple, they wouldn't see me. My auditions were cancelled left, right and centre. So I took it off my CV and I started within a few months getting auditions again.
I know in the past it has been quite difficult for people who are gay to progress through the theatre. You've given a great example then. Are things really improving now, Scott?
Oh, I think so, yes, because a lot more people are out and proud. I have never had any problem about my sexuality because I was brought up in the amateur theatre world. I was Oliver when I was 11. My parents joined the Operatic Society at the same time, and I was surrounded by gay people. And even at the tender age of 12, I kind of knew that I was gay, but I didn't really come out till about 16. And when I went to college, everyone just treated you like yourself. They didn't treat you like any differently because you were gay or straight or whatever. So I've never really had, well, I have had prejudice when I was queer bashed when I was in that horrible season in Margate. I have known that, but in the theatre, the first time I found any prejudice was after La Cage.
Astonishing, really, particularly as La Cage was seen as a very breakthrough show when it first hit the West End, really the first show that was about an openly gay couple.
Well, it was, but it was very frowned upon because, unfortunately, the show was at the Palladium, which, as you know, was known as a coach party theatre, and they'd had Barnum on there and stuff like that, and people would come along from up north and come and see a show and go for a meal somewhere. And they didn't know what was happening. So we did terrible business. Whereas you would think the Americans on Broadway was a massive success. It opened in Boston, which is very conservative. And it was a huge success there. But bring it over to good old Blighty and they couldn't cope with it at all. You know that when the Olivier Awards were on, because actually La Cage was the year, the first time that the awards were called the Olivier Awards. In fact, Lady Olivia was there at the award ceremony. That we weren't even nominated. That for the four musicals, they brought a musical in from Ireland to make up for the fourth musical so that La Cage wouldn't be nominated.
Things have certainly changed, hopefully, in the last 39 years. Scott, let's go right back to your early days. Were you destined to be a performer right from when you were very small? Was it something you always felt was in your blood?
Well, I discovered pantomime as a child and I didn't know where this magic had been all my life. I saw Sleeping Beauty at the Palace Theatre, Watford, is where I'm from. And basically, I was just fascinated where the Wicked Witch, her face turned green like magic. And I didn't realise it was the fuller spot that had got a green filter in it. But I was just absolutely fascinated by this. And then the Works company would take us to the Palladium pantomime. So I saw Cliff Richard and Arthur Askey and people like that. It was just magic. I had to be part of it.
Were your parents supportive of you? Because some parents will say, yes, go for it. Others will say, well, you need a proper job as well.
No, they were terribly supportive, actually. The people that weren't supportive were at school. Because when you had to go to the careers meeting, you know, when you're in your fifth year and you're about to leave school, and I went to the careers meeting, and she said, oh, no, you'll have to have an A-level in English if you want to be an actor. I know a lot of actors who can't spell, so I don't know what that happened. And she just said, oh, no, you want to go and work at the local Ovaltine factory. So they weren't supportive at all. But I auditioned for the arts educational school and won a scholarship. So up theirs.
Well, thank goodness you didn't end up as an Ovaltine.
Yeah.
Scott, you've written three books now, haven't you? Looking behind the scenes and some wonderful stories in them. The first one, If You Want Me to Name Drop. And having read the book, there's certainly a lot of name dropping in there, but also an awful lot of stories.
Yes. Well, you know why I called it If You Want Me to Name Drop, because I was with the local, I live in Spain now, and there's a local drama, well, there was a local drama group, and they were trying to persuade me to come and work with them to direct some shows and stuff. And I decided I didn't want to do anything locally. This is a place where I live. I don't want to work as well. And I said, well, I could come and do some workshops for you. I said, I have directed and been in lots of pantomimes. Well, I was brought up on pantomimes. And I started talking about, you know, as I just said, seeing pantos at the Palladium with Arthur Askey and Cliff Richard. And she said, oh, I love it when people name drop. I went, I was five. I didn't know them. I just went to see them. I said, if you want me to name drop, I can certainly name drop because I've worked with everyone. And I was quite annoyed, actually. And I thought, right, everyone keeps saying you should write a book. So I decided to write the book. And it's basically about everything that the audience don't see. It's mostly backstage stories and stories of rehearsals and auditions. And if anyone is interested in going into the theatre, they want to know about that sort of thing. They don't want to know really about, you know, just what a musical is. What's it like to be on stage? It's fabulous, but it's terrifying. You know, it's cold. Sometimes it's hot. Sometimes it's boring. Sometimes it's thrilling. It's all different. There's so many different colours in the painting.
I think as an audience member, you tend to think that the performance you're watching is almost, it feels like it's the first time it's performed. And it must be very difficult to keep that freshness going every single time. Because as you said, I guess you could turn up to work and you've got a headache or you're feeling a bit off, yet you've got to go on stage and give 100%.
Well, you do. That's when I was at college, when I said I went to the arts educational school, which was the first school in the 70s. You see, Fame was on television at the time. So it became popular for young people to go into musical theatre. So, and the Arts Educational was the first college that did a musical theatre course. So I went there and I remember them saying, when you get into a show, every night has to be your first night because they're paying the same money. So you have to be very disciplined. It helps if you enjoy doing it. So I was in 42nd Street. I was in the original cast of 42nd Street for 22 months. And for the first 18 months, I didn't have a night off. I was one of the equity depths and I loved being in the show. It was a thrilling thing to be part of. It was the biggest musical in the West End in 1984. It won every single award. And it wasn't until I took a break. I went on holiday for 5 days to Torquay and I came back and I went, there's more to life than being in 42nd Street. There's other things. So that's when I decided I had to try and audition to get into something else. And I left 42nd Street to go into Le Cage.
Now, our paths first crossed in 1989 when you were in Metropolis, a musical that about
I knew you were going to bring up Metropolis.
Three Men and His Dog can remember Metropolis. It was one of those shows that could have gone a long way, but it didn't. It was one of the first shows I watched and thought to myself, you can actually be killed quite easily on that set.
I fell through the set at dress rehearsal, one of the dress rehearsals, because, well, not only the set was very high. I can't remember how many meters it was, but if you got on the top level, the floor was made of a grid so you could see through the floor. And the railings, they would never allow it, health and safety now. You'd never be able to do, they'd all have to be on harnesses or something. There were these tiny little metal bars that were just clipped in. If you leant on it, they would break. not only just to make it even more difficult, they put us all in little visors. We had these plastic visors that had a little slit in the middle so you could see out, but you couldn't, your visibility was pretty poor. And if you had to climb up and down the ladders singing, and in time with the music, sometimes you could slip, and I fell through the floor once because there was a hole near the ladder and my foot went through it. We carried on. Everyone was laughing, actually, all the people that were on the stage, and they thought it was hysterical, but I could have been very badly hurt. But this, the thing about Metropolis, there were so many things wrong with it from the beginning. The strange thing is, I put on the West End Wendy's page, which is the page I run for people that worked in the West End before the year 2000, people often put posts about different shows, and I put a couple of photographs from backstage at Metropolis, and loads of people came and said, oh, it was my favourite show, I love that show, I saw it five times and all this and everything. Very rarely at the time when it was on, people were slagging it off all the time. But now, when after it closed, everyone said, oh, it was a classic, it should have run for longer. We actually, when we opened, they read these reviews out that were terrible. And she said, you know what these reviews are? They're from Les Miserables. And we went, what? She said, these are the reviews that Les Miserables got. She said, we'll run, we'll run. We didn't, of course. We ran 6 months and 2 weeks. The company in Metropolis were absolutely amazing. I have never laughed so much doing a show. The rehearsal period, we had electrical strikes in the West End. We used to sit in the dark in the Piccadilly for 6 hours waiting for the lights to come back on, being paid to sit in the dark, playing hide and seek. I have never laughed so much in my life as doing Metropolis. I was surrounded by fabulous people, and the singing was lovely, and some of the songs were beautiful. It was just a bit of a nightmare to be in, because they would change the songs and write, this is cut, and then this is added, and then the costumes are changed. Everything was changing all the time. It was like being in a different show every week.
I'm glad I got to see it a couple of times. Anyway, let's leave Metropolis in the past, as you would probably like to do so. What are you doing at the moment then, Scott? What are you working on in Spain?
Well, I am resting at the moment, and I'm not writing another book. But what my plan is with the three books is, because I've just moved to a new apartment, so I've unpacked lots of different things. The third book that I wrote before, A Life Well Spent, is all about packing up my life when I lived in France and unpacking it in Spain. And it's basically a photograph will remind me of a story, and I will tell stories about people like George Hearn and Sue Pollard and Lisa Goddard and loads of people like that. And I'll tell stories about working with them. My dear Barbara Windsor, I have hundreds of stories that I've told in all three of the books. She's always heavily featured. And Danny LaRue, of course. And that's what the third book was all about. So the fourth book, if I do write one, will be a compilation of all the books together with some added photographs and a few more stories. But that'll be in a couple of years' time, I would think. So I am officially resting at the moment.
There's never a long rest for you, though, Scott. I'm sure something will be coming up around the corner fairly soon. We'll get you back on in a couple of years if we can and talk about your latest book. The three books you've got so far, then, we have got, if you want me to name drop, Diary of a West End Wendy. Your second book was More Diaries of a West End Wendy. And the third one, you just said, A Life Well Spent. All available, I'm assuming, online?
They're all on Amazon. If you go onto Amazon and you put Scott St. Martin, it will come up on the page. You just put Scott St. Martin with a Y, St. Martin, and just have a look. When the first book came out, I was amazed because I thought, I only wrote it for me. I didn't write it for anyone else. I wanted to get this. My brain was full of all these stories. And I put it on Amazon. And within a week, I was the number one bestseller of books about theatre, beaten in the second week by some unknown called Andrew Lloyd Webber. He released a book and then knocked me down to second.
I don't know whatever came of him, to be honest, Scott.
Whatever happened to him, I don't know. He's probably living in Spain as well.
Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time. You have got some wonderful stories, and it would be lovely to get you on again one day and talk about some of those specific stories.
Oh yeah. Yes, I will do that. Great fun.
We wish you all the very best over there in Spain. And thanks for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.
My friends, my brothers and my sisters, every time we meet, our meetings are growing. Every time I speak, you hear me better, and I know your memory's growing. But there's one thing you've always got to know, that you are the light, you are the future. Where there is wrong, you make it right. Let every heart rise up and follow. Be strong, for you are the light. No man is small if he's a believer. You'll only lose if you don't fight. Pass the torch to your children. Let them not fear the night. You must keep this vision in your sight. For you are the light. You are the future.